was all alone. My times of trouble and pain. I used to think there was no one else who felt the cold and rain. Then I woke up to humanity. We were standing hand in hand, and I knew we were one again across this great land.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. So happy to be with you here again, although I did get up kind of late and rush in here. I was like, oh, God, I'm doing a show today. But I'm happy to be here with you. I want to start out the show by just giving thanks in general, which I do every day, from the wonderful people in my life and the wonderful opportunities. As I was leaving this morning, my wife had been up early going through our bookshelves and looking at some of the books, and there's one there by Hugh Prather, or Prather, I don't know how he pronounces his name, P-R-A-T-H-E-R, that's always been one of my favorites. It's called Notes to Myself, and it's really his path notes, and it says, it's a very long poem, basically, but the last part says, but it's morning, I have been given another day to hear and read and smell, and walk, and love, and glory. I'm alive for another day. I think of those who aren't. So it's a nice time to think of those who aren't, and to honor their memories, and to, as we go into the world, all the things, the myriad things, the 10,000 things that we take for granted. And notice that you can smell, if you can, and that you can hear, if you can, and you probably are if you're listening to this, and then feel every sensation on your body, the ones you call good, the ones you call bad, the ones that you don't normally notice, and what an incredible miracle. I mean, it's a miracle beyond miracles to be able to feel, to sense, to be aware of those sensations on the body. It's just, it's mind-boggling, and so often we spend 99.99% of our time either trying to get rid of some sensation or not being aware. So just spend a moment. Just revel in this joy of experiencing whatever sensation is in your body. Even if you would call it pain, notice that you have the capacity to sense, to feel, which means that you're alive. And it's infinitely more likely that one not be alive. So enjoy. So thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be given another day and to be able to spend it with loved ones, including you on the radio. So this is Dr. Needers, John Needers, Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. And for those of you just tuning in, I do a show every Thursday morning from 8 to 9. It's a call-in show. The number here, that would be good if I give out the number occasionally, is 415-543-8255. So that's 415-543-8255. And hopefully, like I said, I just kind of hopped up kind of late today. Hopefully you're going to keep me wide awake with some scintillating questions or some non-scintillating questions. Anything that is important to you, I'd love to look into. So let's go ahead and take a call. Hi, this is Dr. Needers.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. This is Kate.
Yeah, hi, Kate. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, I enjoyed your introductory comments because I was just talking to some friends about the fact that it's really important for us to love, to extend love to everything that we have, including the challenges during these times, because then we get to a place of balance and we send the right message to the universe for what we want to manifest in this dimension. So,
yeah, one of my patients the other day, who's an incredible woman, Kathleen, I'm not sure how old she is, but she has the energy of a really energetic 20-year-old, and she's constantly out in the world. And she was saying, "Yeah, I just have to remember," and she does very clearly, that things don't happen to me; they happen for me. And it's all for my personal growth. It's all for me to experience and utilize and transcend on occasion. But it doesn't really happen to me. It's for me. And that was really kind of inspirational for me.
That is. That's a good one to remember. I wrote that one down. So I just wanted to check in and let you know that at 12 o'clock noon, after we talked last Thursday, I was down in Chinatown seeing the herb doctor at Draylene Tong Herb.
Oh, yeah, Henry.
And yes, Henry.
Henry, yeah. Henry's been a fixture in Chinatown for a very long time. Very good herbalist.
34 years, yeah. So he gave me a formula. I started taking it, and on the evening of the sixth night, I noticed the spots are beginning to heal from the inside out. And
right.
What used to be one solid spot is now three. And so it's amazing what these herbs are doing. So
that's so wonderful to hear. I'm so glad you did that.
Yeah, I am too. And I'm really, when you said, and you really need to see someone soon, I got that message. It's like, okay, this is happening today.
Well, yeah, because those things, like everything else in life, when we catch it early, you know, it's usually easy to handle. And the longer it gets entrenched and set in, of course, then it's just a lot more work to get rid of it. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
You're welcome.
So I just wanted to share that testimony. The herbs are working. I saw him again yesterday. He modified the formula slightly and said that'll even help with the 5% healing for my fracture in my foot, which the circulation, something's not quite right. And he said that's going to help it.
Yeah, because it's a blood stasis condition. And if you can invigorate the blood and get it to more places, you know, we have our biomat here, which I've spoken about some, which is an infrared heater that goes through amethyst crystal, and according to the company, it heals everything. I'm skeptical about that, but it's really amazing when we get people on it with a variety of injuries and detoxification issues, because it will almost double blood flow after people are on it for a while, because it relaxes the arteries so much and heats them, and people get off of there like they're new people. It's just wonderful when you can get that blood really, really pumping and moving.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well,
yeah.
I might have to try that biomat sometime.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. If you get a chance, lay on one for a while until you get nice and sweaty. And we've done people's blood. They get worried because they can, okay, you know, sometimes you can kind of feel your blood pumping, and they get worried, oh, gosh, is my blood pressure getting high? So we'll check them before and after, and we get a significant drop in blood pressures. And they're kind of amazed. It's like, well, all this blood's flowing. And the reason is when you dilate the blood vessels, it takes less pressure to push the blood through. And so we get big drops in blood pressure on there. Yeah, it's very fun.
Okay.
All right, Kate.
Well,
thanks a lot for the call.
Thanksgiving.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Sure thing. Bye.
Well, it looks like we've got some more callers. Let's go ahead and take another call. Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, John.
Kent, hey.
Hey. I've come across a number of people in the last few years who have broken or fractured their wrists or had trouble getting the wrist to heal. I mean, this goes right into what the person before me was talking about, having a broken bone or something.
Yes.
Have you often used acupuncture to treat broken wrists, ankles, other bones that have been slow to heal?
All the time. Lots and lots and lots. We get the opportunity more with peripheral bones, hands, you know, fingers, toes, wrists, things like that. It's another one of those things, and I'd mentioned this on the radio a while back. I'm going to be doing a seminar for acupuncturists, but also doctors and nurses on integrated diabetes care. And someone said, well, is that a lot harder? You know, since you have doctors coming, do you have to do things? I said, you know, I put in a few more research sightings because they like to see things presented a little differently. But I said the biggest problem is I can't really tell the truth. And they kind of looked at me like, what do you mean? I said, well, if I tell them the level of success that we get with diabetes, they'll walk out. Because in their reality, what I'm telling them is not possible. And so they immediately put me in the category of being a snake oil salesman. And so I actually have to dumb it down. And I can talk about our successes, but I can't put a statistical measure on it because they don't believe me. And I said the same thing, for example, is true with ulcerative colitis. If I tell a medical doctor what our success rate is with ulcerative colitis, they will never listen to me again. So I have to tell them, yes, we have some successes, and I'll talk about cases, but I can't give them numbers because it's so dramatic. The same thing is true with bone, with fractures. This came up yesterday because I had someone in with a fracture, and I was talking about my experience. And quite a few years ago, I was doing a martial arts testing, and I was being a partner for somebody, and the somebody was a first level student, and they weren't very good, and it was a very crowded room, and they did a very bad throw on me, which, you know, if it were for real, they couldn't have gotten away with it, but it was a test, and I'm trying to help them. But it was a very bad throw, and I was going to go flying into a mirror.
Oh.
So I cut the throw short, but in doing so, I landed awkwardly on my left arm and fractured the radius, one of the two bones in the arm. So, you know, I go to the doctor, and he says, yeah, your arm's fractured. And I said, yeah, I know. And I actually went to my chiropractor first, who said it was pretty well aligned, but just did a little bit of tweaking and aligned it. So when I got to the doctor, he said, yeah, it's really well aligned. And, you know, gave me some instructions. Well, I went out and started immediately doing electroacupuncture on it. I got friends that do medical qigong to start working on it. I got a couple Reiki practitioners, you know, moving energy through it. And then I would do what's called bone breathing, which I've, you know, practiced for many decades, that brings kind of an electromagnetic energy into the bones. So I go back to him in a few weeks, and they do an x-ray, and he comes out and he goes, why are you lying to me? I said, excuse me? He goes, why did you lie to me? And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. He says, yes, you do. Is this a workers' comp scam, or is this some scam you're trying to pull? I said,
he was
look.
Actually angry.
Yeah, he was mad. And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. He said, look, it is physically impossible for you to have broken your arm when you said that you broke it, because no radius bone can heal that quickly. You should be halfway through the healing process, and you're over 90% through the healing process. And so I proceeded him to tell him what I had been doing, and he basically just turned around and walked out of the room. Had no interest whatsoever. And that was my personal experience, and I've had that experience with many people. One of the dangers, particularly in the feet and in the toes, is of non-union fractures, where the fracture doesn't heal properly and the bones don't knit together. And that's not uncommon in the feet. There are a couple bones in particular where that happens. And so far, I don't believe I've ever had a non-union fracture. I can't remember one where we have done, the myriad of modalities that we do for that. And at the core of those modalities is actually electroacupuncture. Now, it's been known since electricity was invented, and probably before that was static electricity. I've seen some evidence coming out of China and France. But the French did a lot of work. Right after electricity it was discovered how to control electricity, they did a lot of studies and experiments on bone healing, and discovered that by running a low level of current through the bones while they were healing, that the healing was dramatically faster. Well, with electroacupuncture, it's even faster, because there are certain frequencies that we can get to with microcurrent, and certain intensities, actually, of charge with microcurrent that, let me back up a second. So if you're doing, say, a TENS machine, where you put the pads on your skin and you run an electric current through the body, that can be very valuable. It's particularly valuable for muscular tendon stuff. But you have to use millicurrent, and that does not match the natural current of the body. When you use microcurrent, it is actually very close to the body's natural intensity, and you can pretty much match frequencies in a certain way too for some things. And so what happens is, because we're using needles that penetrate the skin, we don't have to overcome the resistance of the skin, because the skin is an insulator. And
oh, yeah.
So by
in fact, it gets dangerous to have anything significant getting through the skin.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And so it's not quite like having a rubber sheet around it, but it does insulate us from a great many things. And so by penetrating that with the needles and getting right down to the bone and surrounding the bone on both sides, or more than both sides, sometimes I'll do 4 to 6 needles around it, we get this very, very low intensity and then changing frequency going through that. And it In the most recent studies I've seen, it shows an increase in the fundamental energy-producing molecules, the ATP, adenosine triphosphate, of about 400%. And so by doing that, it will double the level of healing, typically. So the tissue will heal twice as fast because you have four times more of this energy-producing molecular compound. So it's very powerful. By contrast, for example, if we're doing more superficial needling and different frequencies in the skin, we can increase adenosine levels by over 20 times. And adenosine is a big deal in medicine now because they found that the higher the adenosine levels, the more it blocks the impulse of pain. And that's why, depending on what I'm trying to do with a patient, I'll use very different frequencies of stimulation. If it's pain that I'm trying to get rid of, I will try to stimulate the body in a way that it releases that adenosine, although we didn't call it that in Chinese medicine, but we're really doing things to stimulate that pain reduction. And if we're trying to get the tissue to heal, we're using very different frequencies and even different point locations.
Okay.
So it really makes a dramatic difference. Now, if you take that, plus you add the herbs that stimulate the movement of blood, the invigorating the blood, plus you add some herbs that have been known to produce a faster rate of bone growth, and you add all those together, you get a really powerful thing. Then, if you do some medical qigong on it so that you're actually moving the energy, it's even faster. Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do because it's so easy and it makes such a dramatic difference. I mean, you can see the difference on x-rays after a few weeks.
And also, I think probably just also some basic nutrition. My father-in-law broke his foot at the age of like 85, and they really expected that his foot would never heal because of his age, but it knitted up very nicely after only 6 weeks, probably partially because of the multivitamin we gave him that had a lot of D3 in it.
Oh, yeah, it makes a huge difference. Yeah, and so then there are all the bone-building things, you know, D3 and vitamin K, silicon, and there are lots of companies that now make good bone products. Fortunately, they're moving a little bit away from the idea that it's all calcium, which is certainly, calcium's a relatively minor player in terms of ingestion for that issue. And then, you know, the gut has to be intact enough so that those minerals can be absorbed. In a lot of older people with poor nutrition, the bones just don't heal.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Kent.
Well, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Okay, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go ahead and take another call. Hi, this is Dr. Neeters.
Hey, John.
Hey there, how you doing?
It's Eric, how are you?
Yeah, hi, Eric.
I got a couple questions for you.
Okay.
One, is it true that there are acupuncture points on the foot for the eyes?
Yes, yeah. You know, one of the things that's interesting is, and I'll occasionally, you know, I'll have patients that don't want to have points, say, on their lower extremity. And they say, can you treat me? And it's like, well, yeah, we have thousands of points. In fact, there are complete systems. There's the major point system that people studying what's called TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, will learn, using the 14 basic channels and then the extraordinary channels. And there are sets of points on that channels that we learn. And these points go back a couple thousand years at least. There are older systems that predate that system and have different sets of points. One of the most commonly used in the United States, and I think probably throughout the world in terms of other systems, is the Master Dong points, sometimes spelled T-O-N-G, sometimes spelled T-U-N-T-U-N-G. And those points are utilizing the channels, but they're also utilizing some other ideas and concepts of qi flow and energy and blood flow through the body that are work a little bit differently. And there are practitioners that use only Master Dong points. And the Master Dong points actually have a lot of points in different locations on the body. And for example, for patients that come in with trigeminal neuralgia, just excruciating facial pain, I never got very good results with the TCM points, but I started using Master Dong points, and I needle 3 points in the lower leg, and suddenly my success rate just took off. I got much, much better success rates. Now, in the TCM system that we learned, there's really only one channel point, one major point on the bottom of the feet, and that's kidney one, the bubbling well point. But if you look at the master dong points, he has a whole series of other points on the bottom of the foot. And there's one series, don't quote me on this because I don't remember the numbers, but I think it's 55.02 probably, could be 03, but I think it's 55.02. And there's a set of 4 points that are used for the eyes a lot. So there's something called, well, they use it for the eyes being red, for eyes that are really sensitive to the wind and they're always tearing up. Photophobia, people that can't go outside really or can't go outside without sunglasses. Headaches from eye problems. Inflammation of the eyelids. All of that stuff is really, really well treated by these master dong points on the bottom of the foot. And those are essentially on the bottom of the foot between the big toe and the next toe, usually called the second toe, but some people number them differently. But anyway, between the big toe and the next toe, in that fatty pad, starting from where the toes come together up in that fleshy part, and then there are 4 points spaced down along that. Now, one could also do acupressure on those points, too. And so these are the main points that I look at on the foot for eye disease, and they're very, very good points.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. That's amazing.
And again, this is a totally different system that is not taught in acupuncture school. You know, often after people get out, the real study starts. And the master dong points are very, very, very popular points because I think they do things more effectively than some of the other channel points do. Now, also, you know, there are complete acupuncture systems like the Koryo system, a Korean system, only utilizes points on the hand. There are there's an ear system where only points of auricular acupuncture, where only points on the ear are used. And people get good success with those. I tend to use whole body points and master dong myself.
That's fascinating.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah,
I mean, really, you know, even as acupuncturists and acupuncture students, you know, we're taught that this is, here's your map. You know, go out and play with it and go out and practice. But it's, you know, only occasionally that I really sit and I'm blown away. And when I say that, it happens about once a week probably, but it should happen in almost every moment. Like, oh, my God, how, with what level of determination and scientific study and, you know, how many hundreds of thousands and millions of cases and billions of cases came before me to discover that these brilliant people discovered these point combinations. Like Master Tong, I guess it was a family system that was taught to him that predates the Neijing system. But he was also one of the foremost, most knowledgeable people about the TCM system also. Just the amount of study and learning and experience that this guy has is really almost mind-blowing.
He reminded me of something my dad used to say, that college is just the beginning.
Oh, boy. That's what I, you know, some of the best advice I got when I was going to school, and I got it from several different people. I said, which school should I go to? And they all said, it basically doesn't matter. Pick the school that's the easiest for you to go to. Now, in my case, I picked a school that was convenient, the school that I'm now the president of, because they were the best school, and I think they still are the best school, for people going back to school. You know, I was older. I was in my 40s, and I was working. I was running a company. I was working 60 hours a week. I had I was a single parent with children at home, and I needed something a little more regular. So that school, is all of the classes for the entire time I was in school, I knew would be on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I could finish the curriculum, which is a four-year curriculum, but I could finish it in 3 years by going year-round. And given I needed to get into practice quickly, that really worked for me. And the bottom line was, It's so true. You get through school and you've memorized. The amount of memorization in acupuncture school is literally mind-blowing.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take people into my herb room where I use mostly powdered herbs, and we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands actually, of bottles of herbs. And I'll say, yeah, and for each of those herbs, and I'll flip open one of my books, and there are about 5 to 10 pages of information. I said, that's the memorization. And then after you've memorized it, then you get to go out and really get into the spirit of the herbs, right, and the spirit of the points until it starts to talk to you. And, yeah, it's just an amazing thing. And you look at these brilliant and dedicated people that have, you know, come before, and I just have such reverence for them.
Hey, can I take you into kind of a difficult area? Do you treat or do you have ideas on incontinence for the elderly and 80s with female or...
Yeah, the best treatment for incontinence, by far, there's nothing even close, is don't get there, right?
Yeah, and, okay.
Yeah, and I have a lot of women. One of the questions that I ask all women is about their urination. Every woman, I don't care, you know, if they're over 18, if they're under 18, I may not. But if it's a woman that has had children, I'll ask them several times, because often there's a little embarrassment or, yeah, oh, well, now that you mention it, I do lose a little urine when I sneeze or cough. And I really put a lot of attention into attempting to communicate to them the importance of fixing that now. And there are so many things that can be done, from a variety of exercises to exercise devices to acupuncture to herbs. So many things that can be done to turn that around while they're in their 30s or their 40s, that by the time they're in their 60s, 70s, 80s, it becomes dramatically, dramatically more difficult.
Yeah.
Because if that pelvic floor is not strengthened, if it gets to the point where it's too lax, then you don't even have the muscle quality to be able to exercise it. And at that point, it becomes very, very difficult, and we have to use a lot of acupuncture to try to reawaken and re-stimulate the pelvic floor. But if you get it in the 30s or 40s, it is almost always reversible. And I have lists of very good doctors and very good physical therapists that, if it's more extensive, that they can be sent to. I have, you know, even over at Kaiser, there's a very good doctor over there and a very good physical therapist that specialize in pelvic floor disorders. And then I have some, you know, private physicians also. And you know, there was a study done a few years ago that totally blew doctors away. You know, medical doctors tend not to, even general practitioners, tend not to go into as much depth in their interviews as we do. It's a little more superficial,
yeah,
and they may ask the question, but they don't pursue the question, and so I pursue it. So the tendency in Western medicine, because of the time issues and other issues, is to not really get down to the bottom of some of those problems. But a PhD student, you know, needing something to do to graduate, did a woman on the street interview session where he interviewed thousands of women, and he discovered, or she, I don't remember, that 80% of women who have had children had significant pelvic floor disorder by the time they were in their late 40s.
Uh-huh.
And this blew the way, and said the fecal incontinence, urinary incontinence, just a whole series of problems. And so this really started to open up some eyes. So again, the best treatment is don't get it. If women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, we can usually fix that with acupuncture, herbal thing. There are formulas that are designed to pull up the central chi, and it'll pull prolapses up, it will pull things up, and then there are a series of exercises to do. I find once women get into their 60s, 70s, it's a lot trickier, because the ligaments internally that hold the organs in place, that hold the uterus in place, that hold the bladder, things start to tip, right? And you get pressure, like say if the uterus tips and the bladder tips, then it gets very difficult. It takes a lot of work to straighten that up. So it gets harder.
Okay. You wouldn't suggest a book for somebody that would want to know about it?
Pardon me?
Do you have a name of a book or anything that would you could give to somebody to...
I don't...
offhand?
I have a couple books, but I can't think of any titles offhand, and I'm not anywhere where I can see them.
Yeah.
There's a woman in the Santa Cruz Mountains that does a lot of work on psoas musculature, but also treats pelvic floor disorders, and I do not remember her name right now. If it comes to me during the show, I'll definitely shout it out.
Okay, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm not remembering her name offhand. But I would, if it's significant, I'd recommend someone find a physical therapist that specializes in that. And they have some, you know, very interesting ways of working with that. And the success rate's fairly high.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep, thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving, and really appreciate your show.
Oh, Eric, it's delightful to hear from you. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Okay.
You know, I had we'd had some quotes earlier, and one of my patients was in yesterday, and it was so gratifying. A patient that's coming in with diabetes and obesity and has just never been able to stick with a dietary program and an exercise program. And when she came in to see me, I was clear that she was pretty motivated. And we set up a very structured program for her. And, you know, she got her family involved and her sister-in-law coming that they would go together to the gym every day. And we're already seeing fabulous results. It's only been a few weeks. But she said she had a great quote. She said about Thanksgiving. So this is for Thanksgiving. She said, "Nothing tastes as good as healthy feels." I just thought that was so, Sarah, I want to thank you for that quote. Nothing tastes as good as healthy feels. I just love that. I got my newsletter yesterday from the Ju Dao Quan, the Taoist Center in Oakland, Alex Fung's school, and he had some quotes in there. It's called A Whisper from Dr. Alex Fung. Said a student asked, "How can I best practice? How should I do?" And these are questions I've been asked many times. He's simply more eloquent with it than I am. How can I best practice? How should I do my daily practice? I think a little of this and practice a little of that. How can I solidify my practice? So for you out there, I'm sure most of you have asked similar questions. How can I solidify my practice? And he replied, if you're thinking about your practice and you practice this and that, you are practicing. Everything that inspires us, all that we pursue, enhances our practice. Okay? So if you're thinking about your practice and you practice doing this and that, you are practicing. Everything that inspires us, all that we pursue, enhances our practice. I think that's just absolutely wonderful. Because it is true, whenever we are mindful and putting our attention on who we are, what we are, what our practice is, we are indeed practicing. And in fact, it became apparent to me many decades ago in working with my teacher, Peter Ralston, or I've had many teachers, but he was the person who I credit with actually creating transformation in my life through his work. I remember we were doing workshops, and many workshops, the most intense workshops I've ever seen or ever done on the planet. And we did a lot of 4 days and some 13-day in contemplation intensives. And then when I started teaching and started working and started teaching these to the public, I remember coming up, and on his podium that he would sit behind to teach, he had a little note that was taped on, and it said, "I renew my commitment to do it now." And that was how he functioned and how I now set out to function. Anything, any time spent bemoaning our lack of practice, any time spent in guilt, any time spent in any of those emotions is itself what is getting in the way of our practice. So when people come and say, "Oh, I feel so guilty," I say, "Stop. Stop feeling guilty. Take that energy and recreate your practice." "Oh, but I've been bad." No, you haven't. Put your attention on your practice now. And see, it's that. And his point in that is, as he's communicating about contemplation, what is critical is that he be in the state of which he speaks, That's when transmission occurs. And so in the instant of him finding himself perhaps off track, maybe he's thinking about a cup of coffee, right? In that instant, don't spend one more thought. Don't spend one more moment of guilt, because guilt is just a way to make us feel better. I know that sounds weird, but by feeling guilty, we're going, ah, look, I am a good person, really. I'm punishing myself by this guilt. Totally worthless activity. Guilt, I've never found to really help move people forward. What moves people forward is to put their attention, have their attention abide in the state that they wish to create in this moment. Right? So as I would be sitting up there and I notice my mind wandering, it would be, I renew my commitment to do it now. And over time it would be, so that each time the lag between presence and reality and wandering mind becomes shorter and shorter. See, anything else, any guilt just pulls us farther off track. So I would recommend practicing that, because I get asked this a lot by my students when they're and the people that I mentor. I usually have one different person here each day of the week, licensed acupuncturists who want to learn different aspects or phases of the medicine. And the difficult part is it's hard for me to teach them what I feel they need to learn. They want to learn about herbs and lab tests and things of that nature. And what's really important is simply presence. Simply presence. Everything else will arise from that. And so they'll say, well, what do you do for your contemplation practice? And I'll say, you know, yes. Yes. And before I walk into any treatment room, as I'm walking down the hall, I'll stop. And in that moment, center myself. Create that presence which allows me to be, see, hear, feel with my patients. And that's my contemplation. And some people, there's a great book called Every Minute Zen, and that's really the point. It, you know, it's wonderful, wonderful to do a sitting practice, and it's wonderful to do a moving or a walking practice and to bring that mindfulness. What I find even more important is just to do it all the time. And if you find you're not, then recommit to doing it. And so to me, it's that every minute aspect. So I want to thank Dr. Fung for his great way of eloquently stating that. Okay, I don't think we have anybody on the line right now, so I'm going to talk for a minute. So hey, if you want to get a call in on Thanksgiving, do it quickly, because I think we have an open line here. I have said a couple times, you know, I forget, you know, as I'm talking about supplements for health, I forget our old favorite vitamin C. And please, always use vitamin C. And I'm going to talk about a specific study in a minute, but let me go ahead and take a phone call. Hi, Dr. Neeters.
Hi, Dr. Neeters.
How you doing?
Hello. Can
Hi.
You hear
me? Yes, I can. Sounds like you've got the little frog in your throat.
Yeah. Well, I just had breakfast. And I have two questions.
Okay.
First one, when I eat my breakfast, my nose runs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when I eat any meal, after I start eating, it seems like I get so cold. I just don't understand it. And
Is that one question or is that both of them?
That's the two questions.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, because they sound certainly related. I'm assuming that when your nose runs, it's a clear phlegm, right?
Yes.
Kind of watery.
Yeah.
And now, again, without seeing you, without taking your pulses, without looking at your tongue, without asking you many questions, I certainly don't know for sure, you know, what's going on with you. So I'm just going to throw out some vague, basically, possibilities. The body is so complex. One of the things that will happen is at the instant that we eat a food that is inappropriate for us to eat, we can have allergenic reactions. And those may be triggered by actually the IgE reaction happening to those foods. But I find even more often over time, it's sort of like Pavlov's dogs, where just the thought, just the first sensation of something will trigger a neurological response. Now, and, you know, I have no way to prove that, but it just seems the case to me, because I have patients that will just kind of get a substance that they're allergic to up to their lips almost, and they'll start having a thickened mucus or a runny nose or their eyes, and it seems too quick for it to be an actual physiological allergenic response. But some people it happens very, very quickly. And I don't know exactly what that is, but the fact that you turn cold very quickly, again, faster than it would sound like a pure physiological response that didn't involve the nervous system would occur. Now, often people will eat, and after they eat, they'll have a sense of coldness, particularly in their extremities. And that can easily be explained by the fact that the blood actually has to move toward the stomach, because the stomach has to be heated to 100 degrees before it will start truly digesting your food. And if we eat something that's even moderate temperature, you know, it might be 60, 70 degrees, as opposed to, say, ice cream that's down close to, 0 degrees, which would be even worse, then it takes a lot of blood flow to go to the stomach in order to heat all of that up. And the body will shut down areas that it doesn't need the blood flow. So while you're digesting your food, you don't need much blood flow in your feet or your hands. And so that could certainly get colder. You know, I remember my mom admonishing me when I was a kid not to go swimming after I ate. And that's where that arises from, because there's not as much blood for your extremities, and the fear was that you would have cramps from, in your muscles. Now, but that would take a little bit of time for that to occur. The food has to get into your stomach, the body has to respond to that, and then you have to get the blood transferring. If it's an immediate response that happens, right when you eat, then I would start to think it's more of a mental, emotional, neurological response, and your body is responding to that. Now, does it happen with every meal or just some meals?
Just some meals, not mm-hmm. every meal.
Have you noticed if the temperature of the food or the type of food makes a difference?
I really haven't paid any attention.
I would recommend that you do that. See if eating different temperature foods, try that. See if eating different types of foods, maybe spicy foods or bland foods or foods that might be sour or have vinegar on them, and see if different tastes trigger it, and see if different temperature qualities trigger it, and see if different foods trigger it, because that would give us a lot more information to look at. Again, the faster it happens, the more it makes me think it's kind of a Pavlovian neurological response, kind of on a mental, emotional level, and the longer it takes to happen, the more it would make me think it was actually the food and its effect on the allergenic and the immune system that would cause it. So I would recommend just playing around with that a little bit and see what those triggers are. And in the inquiry, which is the important thing. And so what I do with my patients is mostly inquiry. That's mostly what I do. I do a little treatment, but it's working with them to, just as I'm doing with you, to create a sense of questioning. What is this? What is this? Uh-huh. When is this? How is this? And once those questions are really asked, then the answers just kind of pop up out of nowhere. Even people with no training in Chinese medicine, no training in medicine, they just will come right up to the surface and become very apparent. So I would recommend doing a little inquiry with it.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I want to say I've listened to you since your first broadcast, and God bless you. You are a genius, and I really, God bless you, because you're certainly saving lives, and educating us. We don't get this type of education in a school.
You're such a sweetheart. Thank you
so much. Well, it's true, and thank you, and God bless you and your family and your staff and everybody, and certainly appreciate you. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Same to you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go ahead and take another call here. This is Dr. Nieders.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. First of all, thank you for your wonderful program. I walk a lot, and I mean, I actually have a reasonably healthy body, but I live up a couple flights of stairs, and I got rid of my car 100 years back, and I live in San Francisco with hills.
Oh, my goodness.
And,
good job.
But at night, I mean, I never get muscle pains in the daytime, but at night when I lay down, my thigh muscles have started to burn in the past maybe 2-3 months.
Mm-hmm. Both sides about the same, left and right?
Yeah, they're the same, yeah.
Uh-huh. They burn. They don't, so it's not muscle cramping, right?
No, it's a burning.
Okay. Do you take any supplements?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I figured you probably did since you were so committed there. Well, burning pains are kind of tricky. They can be caused by a few things. How long has this been going on?
Maybe 2-3 months.
Okay. Since you've been so active, now typically what I would think in most people that would be that they would have a vitamin deficiency. B vitamin deficiencies can do that, certainly. I would think they might have mineral deficiencies, you know, potassium and magnesium, which we more associate with muscle cramping, can also do that. Now, are you talking about the front of the legs or the back?
The front, yeah.
Pardon me?
The front.
Okay. Yeah, because the back is easier. it's kind of typically, and here's where I'm a little uncertain. If it were one leg or the other, there is a really large nerve. It's a sensory nerve, meaning it's to feel things as opposed to energize or innervate muscles. It's called the lateral femoral cutaneous nerve. It doesn't really matter, but it's on the front of the leg, and it's on the surface of the, just under the skin, and it's often being then compressed. And when it gets compressed, we will get, or people will get, that kind of burning sensation. Now, the fact that it's on both sides then complicates it a little bit. Have you ever had any low back problems?
Yeah.
Okay. My guess is, and I would recommend that you get this checked out, that my guess is that it's probably my number one theory at this point, at least, again, it's all a matter of inquiry, right, is that it may be a nerve compression in the low back, because that lateral cutaneous nerve is coming down out of the spine very, very low. It's usually, is it more up toward the groin or more down toward the knee or right in the middle?
It's in the middle.
Okay. The middle part of the leg there is innervated by the L3 nerve, so the third lumbar nerve, L3. And that wraps around from the buttock, from the low back to the buttock, and comes down kind of right through the middle of the thigh on both sides. So if you have compression on that nerve in the spine, you know, right there, then that could press on both sides of the nerve at the same time. And that would be my number one theory. If it was up a little higher toward the groin, it would be L2. If it was down near the knee and through the knee, it would be L4.
Why would it happen only when I lay down?
I don't know. That it's actually kind of a complex picture. It could be that, are you lying on your back when it happens?
No, side.
Side, okay. You know, it could be, what you might try is lying on your back and prop your legs up, right? Oh. Put like 2 or 3 big pillows under your legs and see if that relieves it. That could be a tip. But again, there are a few things, but that it could be, but you're really not a candidate. I'm sure you're getting enough, your mineral content, your vitamin content's good enough, and you've been a person who's been exercising. Certainly if someone just started exercising, you could easily explain it.
Yeah.
But I suspect it's a little misalignment there. You might check with your
medical.
How old are you?
I did waitress work through college. And
oh, God, yeah, that can wear that out. How old are you?
72.
72? Yeah, I would either get in and get an x-ray, or do you have a chiropractor that you see?
No, but I can come up with
that. Yeah, I would either. So you could see a chiropractor who might be able to do a little adjustment in that area. You could see an acupuncturist who could do some acupuncture, probably in that L. I would probably work directly around that L2, L3, L4 area, see if we can relax the musculature so it takes some pressure off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It could be happening in the evening just because you've worked it a lot and you have now more compression on those nerves, and the muscles may tighten up a little bit. And so when they tighten up, they pull the vertebrae more tightly. Could be. So this is something you could see a chiropractor or an acupuncturist or an orthopedic doctor, and any of those three might be able to help you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And again, it's because it's bilateral, because it's on both sides, that it makes me think it's related to the spinal issues more.
Great. Okay. Thank you. And I love your program.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks for calling.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
You know, I started to talk about vitamin C, and I just wanted to mention the Orthomolecular News Service yesterday sent out a bulletin, and it was on a study done on our old favorite vitamin C, which, you know, going back to Linus Pauling, you know, all the doctors and organizations laughing at Linus Pauling and saying he was going to kill himself from taking all that vitamin C, and of course he outlived all of them. I think that's the best check on that one. Everybody else was long dead before Linus taking his high dose of vitamin C. However, in this study, they weren't looking at very high dosages. What they found is that people that were in the highest quartile of the group that they assessed So in looking at this study and then extrapolating it to the population as a whole, so again, there are about 600,000 deaths from heart disease a year, 600,000. And their estimate is that that people in that highest quartile of vitamin C in their blood had 9% reduction in death from heart failure. 9%. That's huge. That's 54,000 deaths per year just from getting in that top quartile of vitamin C. And they said it only takes about 500 to 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C to get in that quartile. Now I ask you, why isn't this being shouted from the rooftops? Why isn't this on the front page of the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, and every other major paper? Why isn't it there? If any drug had Lipitor, for example, when it was on the front page of the New York Times, above the fold, most expensive real estate in the world, basically, they, in their flawed study, said that it prevented one death for 254 people, I believe it was. One for 254 if they took it for 5 years. Now, I may be slightly off on those numbers, but not very much. And that was front page news. Now we see a 9% reduction, 54,000 deaths per year that they estimate could be reduced by taking less than 1,000 units of vitamin C. So, you know, you can't obviously trust the news, so you have to go out and do it yourself. Now, we know that viruses and microorganisms are very dangerous. They attack the heart. They weaken the heart muscle. They're dramatically more important than things like cholesterol levels. And I'm not saying cholesterol doesn't play a role. I'm just saying those have been proven to be much more important. They cause viral myocarditis, lots of stuff. Also, the heart is a muscle. And for those of you in my age group, say around 60, you notice it's a lot harder to keep your muscles in good shape than it was when you were 30. The heart is a muscle. It's just as hard to keep in shape. And you need a much greater level of protective elements for your heart as you get older. So you need things like magnesium, coenzyme Q10, acetyl L-carnitine, etc., D-ribose, and vitamin C to keep that heart pumping well. So again, I want you, my listeners, to have the last laugh in this. I want you to be living well after all the people poo-pooing these supplements are not around with us anymore. Now, I feel very sad for them, but you have to do what it takes for you to stay healthy. So although I may forget to talk about vitamin C, I want you not to forget about taking it. All right? Now, the one last topic, I was reading something and just caught my attention, and it was by Alexandra Jong, who's an MD, a dermatologist, and she was talking about red, itchy rashes that look like eczema that come up on the body. And she pointed out something that I will talk to my patients about. So if you develop a sunburn suddenly or red skin somewhere, the first place to look is to your drugs, if you're taking any drugs. Antihistamines like Benadryl, Zyrtec, Claritin can cause this problem. Antibiotics are notorious, Cipro, Levaquin, Zithromax, Bactrim. Anti-clotting drugs like Plavix, high blood pressure drugs like Procardia, cholesterol-lowering drugs, antidepressants, right, everything from Elavil to Prozac, to Lexapro, Xanax in the sedatives, Ambien, NSAIDs like Emitrex, ibuprofen, Celebrex, oral contraceptives. These are all drugs, Rogaine in terms of skin agents. These are all drugs that can cause redness and rashes on the skin. So if you suddenly develop any of those, immediately the first thing you should suspect is that maybe from the drugs. Now what happens is the ultraviolet light penetrates the skin and it causes a reaction in those drugs. So first thing to suspect is your drugs. Well, I want to thank you. Some great calls. And again, this is one of the really joyous things of my life, being able to spend this time with you. So I want to thank you. Give thanks. Go out in the world and love and be happy. And tune in with me next Monday at 9 o'clock and with Dave and I next Monday at 7 for the Medicine Men. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Balancing Point Radio Show with John Needers, Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine and licensed acupuncturist. You may contact the office of John Needers at 510-814-6900 for appointments. That's 510-814-6900. Also, go to the website www.alamedaacupuncture.com. That's www.alamedaacupuncture.com. Be sure to join John Needers in the Balancing Point Thursday mornings, 8 a.m., right here on KEST AM 1450.
Novartis Diagnostics reminds us that the holidays